weather and climate often cause concern and curiosity, but understanding the facts behind the phenomena can be a challenge. We're here to help. From the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign, and Illinois Public Media, welcome to Weather Realness, a weekly podcast about the skies above Illinois and the world.
I'm your host, Steve Nesbitt, professor in the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences here at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. The March 10th severe storm may have produced the largest hail ever recorded in Illinois. Susan Stevens has more.
Representatives from the South Carolina-based Insurance Institute for Business and Home Safety traveled to Northern Illinois University to confirm the record.
So I got 168.05.
They measured and created 3D models of several hailstones collected by Kankakee area residents during the March 10th storm.
That is a chunk of ice.
The Doris family of Kankakee gave NIU meteorology professor Victor Gensini the record-setting hailstone. Gensini says conditions were right to keep the massive hailstones intact because many landed in the mud.
And so people were finding these stones, but they said some of the larger ones were actually hard to find because they were buried.
The new record is nearly 2 inches bigger than the previous state record. That was a 4.75-inch hailstone that fell in Minooka in 2015.
Homes and vehicles were damaged by this hailstorm. One of the people impacted was Darren Orvis, a resident in Bradley, Illinois. He told us he saw hailstones that were the size of golf balls.
As we're standing in the doorway, the front door, you know, we saw the windshields on all three of our vehicles get shattered. It actually dented the hood on my SUV so hard that the sides of the hood were curling upwards.
Today, we're taking a closer look at the science behind hailstorms and why some hail can grow to enormous sizes. Joining us now is Jeff Frame, a professor in the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Illinois. Jeff, thanks for being here.
Thanks again, Steve, for having me back.
What atmospheric conditions caused this particular hailstone last week?
Yeah, so if we think back to the atmosphere on March 10th, we had very strong vertical wind shear. That allows for the development of supercell thunderstorms, which we discussed on our earlier segment. But that is a thunderstorm on the rising air current, that rising current of warm, moist air that feeds the thunderstorm. That rotates. And what that does is it, one, allows the updraft to be a lot stronger than it ordinarily would be. And second, that rotation, well, that actually allows growing hailstones to stay in the updraft for a longer period of time. It takes a hailstone about 10 or 15 minutes to grow into severe size or something like a baseball. So if that hailstone embryo, we call it, only spends, you know, a few minutes in the updraft, it just isn't going to be able to get all that big. And then also that wind shear, we plot the variation in winds with height, we plot it on something called a hodograph. And if that hodograph is relatively long and straight, that also tends to maximize the residence time of these growing hailstones inside the updraft. And as these hailstones are suspended in the updraft, there's a lot of what we call supercooled water. That is liquid water that's still liquid below the freezing point. And if you want to try this, you know, on some cold morning, if you just take a water bottle, leave it in your car, park your car outside, and then come out the next morning and shake that water, if it's cold enough, it will be super cooled and it'll freeze instantly. And that's basically a large-scale version of what's happening here inside the storm, where it's very, very cold, below freezing, even in the summertime, you know, several miles up into the atmosphere. And so the supercooled water hits these ice particles suspended in the updraft, and the hailstones grow via freezing of water onto them. And if we have a very strong updraft, well, a strong updraft can suspend or basically keep the growing hailstone, you know, suspended up in the air for a lot longer. If the updraft is weaker, well, once the terminal velocity of the hailstone exceeds the strength of the updraft, it will fall down to earth. Or, of course, if the hailstone gets ejected out of the updraft, well, now it doesn't have that rising air current to keep it aloft, so it will also fall back to the surface.
So hailstones can grow to the size of golf balls or even can get much larger. The record hailstone in the United States, which is currently the world record, is the Vivian South Dakota storm.
It was extremely muggy that day, with temperatures in the high 90s on the ground and 96 degrees below zero at the top of the storm, according to a weather balloon. In Les Scott's yard in Vivian, massive hail made incredible sounds as it punched holes in his roof. Scott collected one of the bigger stones. The Weather Service arrived the next day and carefully measured the size and weight of the stone, which was later certified by the National Climate Extremes Committee as the record holder at 8 inches in diameter.
So what causes hailstones to grow so large?
Yeah, I mean, how to get big hail is we just have that growing hailstone be in the updraft for a long period of time, something like 10, 15, or maybe even 20 minutes. So we talked about the shear we need to get the rotating updraft. We talked about the straight hodograph that hailstones like. Now, if the hodograph is very long and curved down low, that is favorable for tornadoes, but not really favorable for big hail. And the other thing we need is probably moderate amounts of instability. If the instability is just too low, like what we saw here back on Sunday, March 15th, the updrafts just can't get all that strong, and you're usually not going to get extremely big hail out of setups like that. But also, if the instability gets really, really large, something like, 6,000 units, the updrafts just get so powerful, they just throw the growing hailstones out of the top of the storm before they can grow to very large sizes. So we kind of look for moderate instability there.
So people in Colorado and Texas often report storms that produce large hailstones. Are there geographic regions in the U.S. that experience more hail than others?
Hail Alley, if you will, is kind of out on the Great Plains, again, from the Dakotas down toward Texas, and then westward up toward the Front Range of the Rocky Mountains, so eastern Colorado, eastern Wyoming can get some big hail there. And then as we go eastward from the Great Plains into the Midwest, so across Iowa and Missouri, they do see their share of large hail there, not as much as the plains, but more large hail on average than we see here in Illinois. And as you continue eastward toward the East Coast, again, big hail becomes rarer and rarer. But again, it's not impossible to get big hail in a place like New York or Virginia. It's just a lot less common than around here. And here, that's a lot less common than out in, say, Kansas or Nebraska.
Can you tell us why that is?
Yeah. One is that we tend to see more of these supercell thunderstorms forming out on the Great Plains than we do in areas farther east. And we've already talked about how supercells do tend to produce nearly all of the very large hail that we see in the United States. And one reason for that is if we think about U.S. geography, go west of the plains, right, you're in the Rocky Mountains. So it's this very high terrain, somewhat dry area out there. And so what happens is we get these layers of air in which the temperature decreases very, very rapidly with height, about as rapidly as the laws of physics will allow away from the surface. And this layer of air gets blown east over returning moisture off the Gulf of Mexico. And so that does a couple things. Number one, that rapid temperature change with height in the middle part of the atmosphere, that tends to be more favorable for large hail. And also at the base of that layer, oftentimes we'll see a stable layer or a cap form. And that tends to inhibit the formation of too many storms and allow more supercells to form out there. And then, kind of Denver area, they do get a lot of pea-sized hail out there. Well, they're also a mile higher than us. So again, some of the really small hail they get, that would have melted into rain here in Illinois. But out on the Front Range of the Rockies, hail doesn't have to fall as far because the ground is higher.
So one of the reasons this storm has gotten so much attention is because of the size of some of these hailstones. And there was softball-sized hail reported in some of the Chicago suburbs when temperatures were only in the 40s at the surface. Can you say how such large hail happened when it was so cold up in Chicago?
Yeah, although we were sitting record highs down here in central Illinois, some of the Chicagoland area was stuck in the 30s all day with a cold wind off Lake Michigan. But the lake actually had nothing to do with this at all. And so what we had is storms that formed in the warm air near or south of the front, that warm front that separated the cold air to the north from the warm air over central Illinois. And then these storms moved northeastward, and they became what we called elevated atop this shallow layer of cold air down near the ground on the north side of the front. Now, storms don't like to ingest cold air, but aloft, we have sometimes much warmer air aloft, and we call this a temperature inversion, where the temperature increases with height. And so the storm might be able to feed off air, say, a mile or 2 miles above the surface. And these storms tend not to produce tornadoes, tend not to produce a lot of strong winds, although occasionally they can. But the hail doesn't care if the storm's feeding on air from the surface or air from above the surface. And again, the wind profiles up there, you know, that the storm was feeling were very similar to those down here in central Illinois, and also favorable for large hail.
So you're listening to Weather Realness, the weekly podcast about climate and weather. We're joined by Jeff Frame, a professor in the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Illinois. So hail reports came in from several areas across Illinois during last week's storm. Obviously, this event happened in March, but is there a hail season in Illinois?
Yeah, I mean, hail season kind of runs from March into June or July, kind of coinciding with tornado season, where we have that overlap between instability and that wind shear that causes our most intense thunderstorms or those supercells. But hail can happen, you know, any time of year. For example, during the tornado outbreak of November 17th, one of the non-tornadic storms actually dropped 4-inch hail on Bloomington, home of Illinois State University. So it can happen any time of year. Champaign-Urbana had a damaging hailstorm, I know, in the spring of 2000. And also July 11th, 2020, that one got me a new roof. And I know a lot of my neighbors also got new roofs because that was a prime work-from-home season there.
Same. So obviously one of the things that we do with tornadoes is that we're able to easily detect them with Doppler radar usually. Mm-hmm. Is there a kind of a secret sauce for detecting hail with radar?
Yes. And this is dual polarimetric radar, which came around about 15 years ago. It was installed on all the Weather Service radars kind of around 2010 to 2012, somewhere in there. And unlike with tornadoes, where we're looking at the velocity, right, with hail, we're looking at other variables. And number one, usually it's going to be reasonably high values of reflectivity. So not just the reds, but into the pinks and then maybe, you know, the whites or the blues, depending on what the color scale on your particular radar site is. But then that isn't enough for big hail. Another thing we'll look at is what's called ZDR, which is shorthand for differential reflectivity. And we're basically looking at waves that oscillate in the horizontal plane and waves that oscillate in the vertical plane. And we're looking at the difference in scattering. And that can tell us something about the shape of the particles that are basically reflecting the radar beam back to the radar. That's why it's called radar reflectivity, right? The raindrops and hailstones and snow and bugs and birds and other things reflect the beam back to the radar. And it turns out that if that ZDR is high, you know, like 2, 3, 4, something like that, that means that whatever's scattering the radar beam is going to be oblate. It's going to look something like a hamburger. It's going to be a lot wider than it is tall. If that ZDR is negative, which is fairly unusual, then that object is going to be tall and skinny, you know, something like a water bottle. I'm not just saying that because I'm holding one here. And if that ZDR is closer to zero, that means one of two things. Either the objects scattering the radar beam are spherical or they're randomly oriented. And so we'd look for a low ZDR near zero, co-located with high reflectivity. And then a third variable we can inspect is what's called correlation coefficient, or sometimes rho HV for short. And that's looking at the correlation between these horizontally and these vertically oscillating waves coming back to the radar. When that's high, near one, that's as high as it can go. That says all the particles the radar is sensing are very, very similar. So they're all rain or they're all snow. Now, as that value decreases down in the range around 0.85, 0.9, somewhere in there, that says now maybe we have rain and snow mixed together, or rain mixed with hail. Or in the instance of large hail, we have hailstones of a lot of different sizes falling down. And as these hailstones fall, again, a lot of them have, you know, protuberances and fingers and things on them, and they're going to rotate and be oriented all different ways as they tumble, as they fall. So we look for low rho HV there as well. And then there's another variable, KDP. We look for that also to be fairly low. That's related to the amount of liquid water being sensed by the radar. And hail, obviously, is not liquid water. It is solid water.
Yeah. So it turns out that through a lot of this, we're pretty good at detecting where hail is occurring. But it is more difficult to estimate whether it's a severe or greater than 1-inch hailstorm. So this turns out to be a little bit of a challenge where I think a lot of the ongoing research is focused.
Right. It can be, you know, for that area. For example, we're not going to, you know, confuse a storm that's making softball-sized hail from a non-severe thunderstorm. But, you know, is that making, you know, half-dollar-sized hail, which is an inch and a quarter across, or is it making only dime-sized hail, which is three-quarters of an inch across? Well, if it's making half-dollar-sized hail, it's also making a lot of smaller hail, too. Most hail that falls is small, pretty much in any thunderstorm. The big hail is fairly rare. Not everybody who sees a supercell thunderstorm is going to see a really big hail. It's just unfortunate that up in Kankakee, the hail core of that storm really did track over a fairly decent-sized city up there.
Fortunately, crops are probably not planted yet, but large hail can cause extensive damage to agriculture, obviously vehicles, siding, even pose a safety risk to people actually hit by large hailstones. So what makes hail such a destructive hazard compared to other types of precipitation?
Right. And even for crops, right, crops are not, you know, as durable as something like a car or a roof or something. So even small hail can, you know, really beat up on corn and soybeans once they start coming up here in a couple of months. But yeah, hail safety of our three severe hazards, so strong damaging winds, tornadoes, and large hail actually produces the most amount of damage in the United States every year of these three hazards. But if you look at injuries and fatalities, large hail only averages a few injuries per year and less than one death per year in the United States. So what kind of leads to this dichotomy in impacts from large hail? Well, in terms of property damage, right, your house, well, you can't protect your house. You can't put a balloon, you know, you can't coat your roof in inflatable airbags. Or your car. Now, I've seen some people try to do this, and I wouldn't recommend trying to do that. But in terms of people, well, you really have to be outside or right next to a window to be injured from hail. If you're inside a building, unless the hail is completely gargantuan, something like the size of a soccer ball or a coffee can it come through a roof? Yes, it can.
So yeah, we have seen that. Yes.
Yes, that storm in Vivian, South Dakota. Yeah, it actually left divots in his lawn. And then, so you want to, you know, not be up in the attic during a hailstorm. But again, if you're inside a sturdy structure away from windows, you'll be safe. You know, inside a car, if the hail gets big, obviously you want to pull over and duck down and, you know, shield your eyes and, you know, cover the top of your head and your neck so you don't have, you know, you'll reduce the risk of lacerations from blown glass. Another thing about hail safety while driving: do not stop under underpasses to take shelter from the hail. If you're receiving large hail and you don't feel comfortable driving in it, sure, you want to pull over onto the shoulder wherever you can. But one thing you cannot do is block the travel lanes of any road, any highway, certainly any interstate, by stopping under an underpass to stay out of the hail. Because what that does is you have, you know, folks driving at, you know, maybe highway speeds. The roadway might be wet, it might be slippery, and then all of a sudden you have these jabronis stopped underneath an underpass, and you have to slam on your brakes. And if the road's wet or if the hail is making the road slippery, that can very, very easily cause an accident. And, you know, some of those same thunderstorm supercells that cause a lot of large hail, another thing they do is they do produce a lot of tornadoes. And an underpass offers no shelter at all from a tornado, and it might actually make the winds a little worse because of a wind tunneling effect there. So do not block traffic under underpasses. If you're caught outside without any structure, you know, even small hail, it's just not going to feel very good. For example, you know, even when it's, you know, raining and it's really windy outside, those raindrops can sting your face. Well, the hail is not going to feel any better than that, and even small pea-sized hail is going to, you know, feel probably quite a bit worse than that. But if you're caught outside in a hailstorm, you want to get inside any structure you can, preferably you know, a good structure like a house. You know, if you have a car, certainly that's better than nothing. And say, you know, you're out at a park. You know, you took a little walk down to the city park, and all of a sudden I forgot to look at the sky, and now here comes the hail. Even standing under a pavilion will give you a good amount of shelter from the hail. Now, that won't provide a lot of shelter from lightning or a tornado if one were to happen. But again, it would certainly, you know, greatly reduce your risk of bodily injury from hail.
So when we hear about storms producing large hailstones, it of course makes us wonder whether these type of events could become more common in the future. In the future, do you think we should expect more hail and larger hail in Illinois?
Yeah, that's a really tough question. The tornadoes, you know, we kind of talked about that in the last segment. We have a pretty good understanding of that, we think. Damaging wind risk, we think, is going to go up in a warmer climate just with more instability. But hail's been a tougher nut to crack, again, because of some uncertainties with the hail database. For example, about 20 years ago, they changed the size of severe hail from dime-sized to quarter-sized. And right after they did that, the amount of quarter-sized hail reports, like, more than doubled. So obviously we have artifacts like that in the database. One recent study, I believe, from one of our colleagues did indicate that, you know, hail sizes may go up in the future. But that's tricky because it depends not only on instability, but also on storm mode and really storm type, if you will, the supercells. And, you know, kind of really until the last 5 years or so, some of the parameters we thought were favorable for large hail really aren't that favorable for large hail. So there's some uncertainty there as well. So there's a chance that might happen. But again, we're not going to be turning a quarter-sized hailstone into a baseball-sized hailstone here.
Well, Jeff, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me, Steve. It's always great to be here and to talk weather with you.
I'm Steve Nesbitt. We've been talking with Jeff Frame, a professor in the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Illinois. What are your questions about hail and severe weather? Leave us a voicemail at 217-333-2141 or email weatherrealness@illinois.edu. And Illinois' top scientists will answer them on an upcoming episode of Weather Realness.
Weather Realness is produced by
Jeff Frame,
Trent Ford,
Steve Nesbitt,
Reginald Hardwick,
Stephanie Orellana, and myself, Maddie Stover. Funding for this podcast is partially provided by the Backlund Charitable Trust. Weather Realness is produced by the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and Illinois Public Media. We'll talk with you again next week.